Hi, everybody. A couple of remarks before I start. I'm not a Marx scholar, so I will not be talking as a scholar. I will be talking about Marx as a revolutionary, and that is, I think, his legacy, Marx as a revolutionary.
Right.
Specifically, I want to talk about Marx and Engels' views on elections and peaceful change, and how those views actually changed over time and became, let's say, more refined, especially under the experience and impact of the class struggle in France, and specifically and most importantly, the Paris Commune of 1871. So that's kind of my essence of this talk. So it is taken for granted in the corporate media and by most respectable intellectuals that voting matters, and that the fate of entire countries, at least those enjoying democratic institutions, is determined by the outcome of periodic elections and the configuration of forces within parliamentary bodies, as well as by the qualities of the people democratically elected. Nevertheless, the permitted scope of debate within capitalist society in normal times is quite limited and is increasingly narrow. Viewed broadly, most important decisions that affect daily lives of normal people are made outside of the halls of political power. Business owners and managers have much greater impact as they decide who has a job and who doesn't get a job, and who gets a pay rise and who doesn't, than was decided in Parliament. Economic decision-making is the private affair of capitalists and is the most autocratic, anti-democratic process you can imagine, limited only by the weak constraints that workers, usually through their unions, have been able to impose. At first glance, this might imply that participation in voting in elections is futile, and some militants inspired by Marxism have drawn that conclusion, but certainly Marx and Engels did not hold this view. In November 1847, when Marx and Engels wrote the Communist Manifesto, in which they argued that the revolutionary socialist transformation of society would be initiated by the working class wresting control from the bourgeois state, and they speak of the revolutionary state as the proletariat organized as the ruling class. Marx and Engels specify the first step in the revolution by the working class is to raise the proletariat to the position of ruling class, to win the battle of democracy. It's become a famous phrase, the battle of democracy. It's usually wielded by those people who want to turn Marx into a social democrat, because I think there's a misunderstanding in the development of how this changed over time. It is important to recall that when those lines were written, the battle, winning the battle for democracy, nowhere did a working class majority have the franchise. The vote was limited to greater or lesser degree to adult male property owners. There is therefore a certain ambiguity or abstractness conditioned by historical experiences to that point in Marx and Engels' projection of a revolutionary seizure of power by the working class. Winning the battle of democracy was a general formulation, and it was at least theoretically conceivable at that point to consider that a revolutionary assault on the old regime would put in place a democratic republic that would result in electoral ascent of the proletariat. In February 1848, a few months after the Communist Manifesto was written, a revolutionary wave swept across Europe. On the basis of the rapid developments in the class struggle over the next few years, particularly in France, Marx drew some important conclusions about the state and elections. The French working class, which had been a driving force in the democratic movement, was betrayed by the bourgeoisie and petty bourgeoisie, drowned in blood on the streets of Paris in June 1848. The bourgeois democratic republic that had been put in place furthered the process of centralization and strengthening of the state. Moreover, Louis Bonaparte, nephew of the Emperor Napoleon I, was elected the first president of the Republic and used his position to overthrow the Republic and re-establish the empire in what Marx described as a forceful repetition of Napoleon's rise to power on the back of the Great French Revolution. In a brilliant analysis of these events, the 18th Brumaire of Louis Bonaparte, Marx observed that the Parliamentary Republic had been turned against the revolution, concluding that a socialist revolution would have to smash the state machine in order to put the working class in power. Yet both before and after drawing this important conclusion about the need to destroy the old state, Marx and Engels held open the possibility, at least in England and the United States, that the working class might come to power peacefully via elections. Although they seem to have considered this scenario unlikely, they did not write off the possibility, which in their view existed because of the comparative weakness of the bureaucratic repressive apparatus of those states in the mid-19th century. Thus, in August 1852, Marx wrote, "Universal suffrage is the equivalent for political power for the working class of England, where the proletariat forms the large majority of the population, where, in a long though underground civil war, it has gained a clear consciousness of its position as a class. The carrying of universal suffrage in England would, therefore, be a far more socialist measure than anything which has been honored with that name on the continent. Its inevitable result here is the political supremacy of the working class." So Marx clearly believed there was that theoretical option of the working class basically electing itself to power through universal suffrage. Those were their views around that time. In September 1872, in a speech in Amsterdam following the Congress of the First International, Marx challenged the view, defended by the anarchists, that workers must abstain from politics and elections. To the contrary, the working class needed to prepare itself for the seizure of political power, and Marx acknowledged that the ways to achieve that goal are not everywhere the same. And I can well quote, "You know that the institutions, mores, and traditions of various countries must be taken into consideration. And we do not deny that there are countries, such as America, England, and if I were more familiar with your institutions, I would perhaps also add Holland, where the workers can attain their goal by peaceful means. This being the case, we must also recognize the fact that in most countries on the continent, the lever of our revolution must be force. It is force to which we must someday appeal in order to erect the rule of labor." While there is no evidence that Marx and Engels ever abandoned this view, it should be weighed against the more general assessment of the state that they drew in the wake of the experience of the Paris Commune of 1871, when for the first time ever, the working class, only in one city and only for a few months, seized state power. In the book The Civil War in France and in the new preface to the Communist Manifesto of 1872, Marx and Engels argued that the course of the class struggle in France had proved that, quote, "the working class cannot simply lay hold of the ready-made state machinery and wield it for its own purposes." That was a very important new and different conclusion that they drew. Having smashed the old state, I'm talking about the commune, having smashed the old state, the working class created new state institutions centered on the repressive force of the armed proletariat. The commune, which instituted universal suffrage, abolished the old parliament insofar as it fused the legislative and executive functions of government, which was now in the hands of the working class. Marx argued that the Parisian working class had shown in practice what the dictatorship of the proletariat would look like. Working class democracy based on new institutions built on the rubble of the old bourgeois state. The 1870s were a transitional decade in working class politics in Europe. The First International broke apart over the split between the anarchists and the Marxists. Yet, the organizational and political apparatus of what would later become the Second International was beginning to form in Germany, where two groupings of the socialist movement came together to create a unified Social Democratic Party. Marx and Engels criticized the so-called Gotha program that formed the political basis of the fusion, which had been shaped by the reformist impulses of the followers of Ferdinand Lassalle. In September 1879, Marx wrote a scathing circular letter in which he condemned the reformist and anti-proletarian leaders of the party, including Eduard Bernstein, who had reported with evident pleasure that, quote, "precisely at the present time, under the pressure of the anti-socialist law, the party is showing that it is not inclined to follow the path of violent, bloody revolution, but is determined to follow the path of legality, that is, of reform." Marx responded to this claim, "So, if the 500,000 or 600,000 social democratic voters between a tenth and an eighth of the whole electorate, and besides dispersed over the length and breadth of the country, have the sense not to run their heads against the wall and to attempt a bloody revolution of one against ten, this proves that they forever renounce taking advantage of some tremendous external event, a sudden revolutionary upsurge arising from it, or even a victory of the people gained in a conflict resulting from it." He clearly had a very different view than Bernstein on reform. Marx's argument, shared by Engels and running as a consistent thread throughout this period, was that a Socialist Workers' Party should stand for election to parliament, but not for the purposes of enacting reforms or attempting a peaceful legal transition to socialism and renouncing the revolutionary conquest of power by the proletariat. No. Insofar as the conditions were not ripe for seizure of power, elections and parliament must be used by the party for the purposes of building support and raising socialist consciousness amongst the working class. From the 1870s through to Engels' death in 1895, the two main initiators of scientific socialism attacked the incipient electoralist opportunism of the German Social Democratic Party and the Second International, all the while defending the movement as the most advanced expression of proletarian political self-organization. Shortly before his death, Engels provided a clear articulation of his and Marx's views on socialist participation in bourgeois elections. In election propaganda, it provided us with the means, second to none, of getting in touch with the mass of people where they still stand aloof from us, of forcing all parties to defend their views and actions against our attacks before the people. And further, it provided our representatives in the Reichstag, the German parliament, with a platform from which they could speak to their opponents in parliament and to the masses outside with quite a different authority and freedom than in the press or meetings. In this same document, Engels stresses the importance of election campaigns and speeches from parliament and other bodies as tools of propaganda for the party as it attempts to politically prepare the mass of the working class for the revolutionary seizure of power. Thank you.